Good morning, everyone. Hi, my name is Andrew Harris, and I'm a program manager on the SharePoint social team based out of Boston, Massachusetts. So how many of you have seen a demo of the SharePoint social features so far this week? Hopefully most of you, and if you haven't, I encourage you to check out the social booth at the Expo Center, because people from my team and I will be there, and we'll be able to take you through the feature set. Today, I'm really excited to share with you a different perspective on those social features. Today, we're going to talk about the new object model that we've created supporting these features, both in our own web Ajax-based interface, as well as our mobile applications. And I'm also going to talk about the architecture, the underlying architecture that supports these features. So at the end of the session, I hope you get a better understanding of what is possible as far as extending these features, and a little bit of a better understanding of how this works behind the scenes. So to start off, what is social? SharePoint has a lot of new social functionality. Everything from the new sharing gestures to community sites to just the fact that user profiles, user pictures show up on nearly every SharePoint page. For the purposes of this presentation, there are kind of three core social features that are available across SharePoint. The first that is made use of on nearly every SharePoint page is user profiles. User profiles contain a user's, the public representation of a user. It's essentially a property bag that contains all of those the user's picture, their name, their interests, their expertise, their background. And this information is used to populate relevant search results, help you find people through people search. And it's also used for various relevancy and recommendation algorithms internally for us. And you know, as you start thinking about extending these features, there are a lot of possibilities what you can do with this data to help make your applications, whether it be a SharePoint app or an external system, come alive with user data. The second big component, and this is very new relative to SharePoint 2010, if you've used SharePoint 2010 My Sites, is following. You can now follow people, documents, sites, and tags. Following serves two core purposes in SharePoint. Following is your way to get back to content and people that you care about by looking at your following list in the central location of your My Site or your SharePoint personal experience. I think we're not calling it My Site anymore, so sorry about that. but anyway, it gives you a bookmark to be able to go back to that content and access it. And if you've seen the new Windows Phone app that we have, and the apps will be coming out, we also use following data to populate likely documents that you want to open on different devices as well. So following is a really important feature that we think is going to get a lot of traction because it helps you get back to the content you care about. The second aspect of following is SharePoint's social graph. Following represents the connections people make with other people and content within SharePoint. And that kind of data, again, can be used for all kinds of purposes, from building better recommendations and relevancy within SharePoint. And it can also be used to help users make connections and services outside of SharePoint and bridging the gap between SharePoint and the other services you use in your organization. And of course, the last piece of the social graph is the following social graph help inform what you see in your feeds. Feeds is probably the biggest and most expansive change we've made in SharePoint this release. If you're familiar with the SharePoint 2010 feed system, we've basically completely reinvented it this release from the bottom up. And throughout this presentation, I'll show examples of how that works. Feeds now give you a live, dynamic view of all of the activities about the people, documents, sites, and tags you're following within SharePoint. And there are many different kinds of feeds. There's a public feed. That consists of all the public microblog posts going on in your organization. And then you can also post to site feeds, and site feeds gives you the ability to converse in a more private way across a team that's accomplishing similar goals. So when we look about how this data is stored, how many of you have used SharePoint 2010 social features, the My Site, maybe developed for it? So there are a lot of concepts in SharePoint 2010 that, while we do still support them with these new features, I think we've provided better ways for you to be able to accomplish the same kinds of goals. When we take a look at the storage architecture, a lot of things have changed dramatically from SharePoint 2010. I'll start with the thing that hasn't changed very much. There's still a profile database. There's one per user profile service. And this profile database still contains all of the information about users, their user profile properties, that property bag I was talking about, and also information about what people and tags those users are following. Notice I didn't say documents or sites. The second piece is the social database. And this has changed. Its role has decreased dramatically. In SharePoint 2010, the social database was also the store of all feed information within SharePoint. In this release, we primarily use social database as a store for the SharePoint keywords, the social tags that you use to tag microblog posts and content throughout SharePoint. The final storage location we use is the content database. We still have the model where each user has their own site collection that we call the personal site. And within this personal site, there's a lot more data now. This personal site is still the place that stores your personal document storage, what we now call SkyDrive, SkyDrive Pro. It also stores information about the sites and documents you follow, these new followable entities we've created this release. And finally, it stores all of your public feed posts. So when you write a post to the feed, that data actually gets stored on your personal site in a SharePoint list. One thing that I do want to mention about this change in architecture, when you're especially in an on-premise deployment, when you're thinking about how you want to allocate personal storage space for users, is the limit you put on SkyDrive Pro, the file size or the total space limit, also impacts feed posts and content following. So if you are in a situation where a user has completely maxed out their SkyDrive Pro with documents, that will have a negative impact on their feed posting experience and their following experience as well. So that's something to consider. That's a big change from SharePoint 2010. If you're in an organization that doesn't typically provide a lot of space for users, that's something that you might see as a problem. Now, despite that, there is still a lot of value in putting this data in content databases. For one, the content databases are able to be distributed horizontally as your organization grows. Additionally, by putting this data in SharePoint lists, you automatically get features like e-discovery, and you can set data retention policies on that data. And finally, all this data is exposed very easily to SharePoint search, which really enriches the search experience when you can also take a look at the wealth of information that has been stored in microblog data that users have been, communicating with on all these different sites. It gives you the ability to find answers simply through search. So if you're familiar with SharePoint 2010, you probably know about timer jobs, activity gatherers, and all these features. And at the end of the day, they don't give you a very real-time live experience. And in this release, we really wanted to enable true microblogging, the ability to interact with other people through the feed. So you can make new posts. Everybody can see them. They can reply to them. They can like them. And in order to do that, we actually had to make another layer of storage on top of the three that you saw above that we call the App Fabric Distributed Cache. So App Fabric Caching Service is a service that's part of Windows Server. We make use of that to cache feed data so that you can get a live representation of everything that's going on in your company when you take a look at your feed when you take a look at the feed of everyone you follow, or you take a look at the organization feed. This service removes the need for activity gatherers and timer jobs that used to do the role of gathering up events that were happening across SharePoint and delivering them to your newsfeed. In this release, when you make that request for a newsfeed, we gather that data on demand and deliver it to you in milliseconds. So, and I want to emphasize, all of our requests are now serviced real-time based on the current state of the social network. You're truly interacting with people in a live way when you're using these features, which is a big change from 2010. When you're using our object model, or when you're using the experience, sometimes we rely on this cache data. The cache data typically has a lifetime about of about a week, which is great for the purposes the primary scenarios we use it for, which is the following view of content you follow and the everyone feed, which is the posts of everyone in your organization. But we also make use of the data that shows up in the various social databases and search index data in our UI. Before I start going into the specific demos, there's one last thing I want to say, and this is another big change for us. All of these features are available and designed to have feature parity with our web experience on any platform. We provide a few different tools to make it easier for you to work with social data. We have a complete client-side object model, which makes it really easy to work with social data in C#, Silverlight, and Windows Phone applications. And for today's demos, that's what I'm going to be focused on as we explore the object model. There's a JavaScript object model, which does the same thing if you're working in JavaScript applications or maybe web features. And finally, there's completely platform-independent REST. Any device that can connect to the internet can access this data. If you want to learn more about the JavaScript object model, REST, and how all this stuff works together in apps, the demos I have today are going to be fairly simple because we're going to focus on what objects are available. But tomorrow, Nick Swan is going to have a presentation at 10:30 that talks about how to build applications that use SharePoint data, including social data in Ruby. And so you'll get a good look at what it looks like to work in REST. And also at noon, Matthew McDermott is going to give a presentation that's going to demonstrate a lot of this stuff and building SharePoint apps that make use of social features. So if you want to learn more about how all this stuff works together, I'd encourage you to check out those sessions as well. So let's start with user profiles. I'm actually just going to run straight into a demo. I think the concept of user profiles is pretty simple. It's just a property bag of user properties. In this demo, I'm also going to show how you authenticate with SharePoint and how you get a C# application running that can make use of the social features. So I'll switch over. Cool. Can everybody see okay? I tried to make the font a little bigger. Is that all right? Cool. So this is a very simple application that's going to pull a few user profile properties and establish a client context with my server. Before I get into the code, I want to talk about what dependencies are required in order to interact with SharePoint using CSUM. So if I open up my references, there are three core DLL files that you're going to need to reference in order to communicate with SharePoint Social. The first two are pretty much requirements for any social app. It's the client and client runtime. And these provide all the common features, like client context, that are required for any communication with SharePoint through CSUM. And the last one is user profiles. And user profiles provides all of the data that we use, provides all the APIs that we need in order to work with the social features. So with that, the first step is you establish a context. And very simple. When you create a new context object, you just pass in the server URL for the server you want to connect to, and you're done. The next step is establishing authentication. And there are two main ways to do authentication in SharePoint. What I'm showing you today is the easy way, which is looking at just passing in a user's account name and a password and authenticating as the user in that way. Now, I think for most of you, that this isn't going to be a great way to authenticate because it's not usually good practice to store usernames and passwords in applications. We have another method that you can use, a passive authentication method that allows the user to actually go to the SharePoint site in a frame, log in, and then the application can get a token that it can use to work on behalf of the user. But since I'm going to be demoing a console app today, this is my only option. So another thing that I want to say is the great thing, everything you're going to do is going to be wrapped around a context object. And the cool thing, context does a lot of cool things, and we'll see that throughout these demos. One thing it does is it allows you to batch up your queries and just make a web request when you're ready. And so even though I've kind of defined, you know, two things I want to do right now, I haven't yet communicated with the SharePoint server. I'm going to wait until a little bit later to do that. So my next step is I'm going to instantiate a People Manager object. And it might be worth going into Object Browser and seeing what the heck People Manager actually is. So like I said, the user profiles DLL contains all of our social information. And you're going to see four namespaces here. And this is where it can get a little confusing. So all of these have to do with social data. But when you're building applications on social, there are really two places that I want you to look at. The first and most important is the social namespace. And the second is user profiles. The social namespace is our effort to unify the following features and the feed features under a single namespace. They use a lot of similar objects, and so the social namespace merges those objects and makes it a lot easier to work with these features in conjunction. You will see APIs that involve following in the user profiles namespace, and you will see APIs regarding feeds in the microfeed namespace. But in both cases, you'll be saving yourself a lot of trouble if, wherever possible, you try to use the APIs in the social namespace. Now, if you want to get user profile data, the user profile namespace is the way to go. And all of the methods we have available exist in this People Manager object. And again, you're actually going to see this is mostly occupied by following APIs, but this is not the place I would recommend using those APIs. The key APIs that you're going to want to use in here are things like getMyProperties and getPropertiesFor. And I think these methods are pretty self-explanatory. Let's see them in action. So I'm going to create a personPropertieS object so I can receive the properties that I'm requesting, and then I call getMyProperties. And then I'm going to go back to my client context. The personPropertieS object contains a wealth of properties about users. And for the purposes of my demo, I don't care to see all those properties. So I can actually use the context load function to specify which properties I want to see. And so in this case, I'm going to be requesting the display name and account name. And then I'm going to show them in my console app. So this is a pretty simple demo. So it's communicating with the server right now. And then you can see I've authenticated as Matt Fezco. And this gives me his account name on this SharePoint Online server. So pretty simple. That's how you access profile data. Cool. So let's see. Great. So a few things. I think the key features that I want you to get out of the profile section is you want to use the People Manager namespace to get profile properties. The key functions you're probably going to be using are getMyProperties, getPropertiesFor, and setMyProfilePicture. A really important side note is that we don't provide functionality, with the exception of profilePicture, we don't provide functionality to actually change profile properties using our client object model. You can only receive them. So jumping into following. Again, I just want to emphasize what I talked about before. The following data is distributed across the profile database and the content database. And when you're thinking about deploying SharePoint in your company, you definitely want to consider the space you provide for each user in their content database, because following data will be impacted by that. And I'm going to jump right into a following demo. So for following, I'm going to do something maybe slightly more interesting. I'm going to take a look at the people that I am currently following and the people that are following me. And then I'm going to identify the people that are following me that I haven't followed yet, and I'm going to follow them. I used follow a lot in that sentence, but hope it made sense. So this is going to be a two-step process. Again, it's pretty simple, and one of the key points I want to get across is, our goal this release was to make this stuff as simple as possible. So I hope you find that is the case. So I create a following manager to start, and we'll take a look at what the following manager is. Following manager exists in the social namespace. One of the reasons why you would want to use Following Manager over the Following APIs in People Manager is the APIs in Following Manager unify following for people, sites, documents, and tags. If you were glancing at the follow functions in People Manager, you'll see we have separate functions for following tags and following people. So Social Following Manager brings all that together. And it's pretty simple. You can do things like follow something. You can stop following. You can get followed content. You can get the number of things you're following. All the basic functionality you'd expect. One thing, I figured this is probably a good time to talk about it. When you get followed stuff, there's different kinds of followed stuff. And I don't necessarily want all of it all the time. Maybe I only want to see the people a user's following. Maybe I only want to see the sites they're following. So when you request either get followed or get followed count to see what the user's following, you can specify a social actor type. You can request all, which gives you everything. Documents, sites, tags, users. Those are all pretty self-explanatory. And there's one that I want to talk about because it's kind of got a cryptic name. It's a little weird. It's called exclude content without feeds. But it is important. What exclude content without feeds does is it gives you the list of all the sites you're following that contain a news feed. So if you're building an application and you want users to be able to post to news feeds and you want that list of sites the user's following that have the news feed capability, that's the social actor type you would want to use. So Social Following Manager. Cool. So let's take a look at this demo. So I'm going to get my followers, and then I'm going to get my followed. And I'm going to specify that I only care about the users in this case. And I'm going to get that data from the server. I've got a little helper method. It's not that interesting to look at that just compares the lists and gives you the difference. And then I'm going to print out the people who are following me that I haven't followed yet. And you can see I just run this in a loop. I can pull out the person's name. And then I'm going to pull out their account name. Sorry, I'm going to pull out their name. And then I'm going to follow. That's what this is. And you can see when I follow, I provide something called a social actor info object. And all you do with a social actor info object is say, what kind of social actor are you talking about? And what is its name? I actually forgot to talk about this. Sorry. So social actor is a concept we have in our object model that represents things that you can follow, so people, documents, sites, and tags. So they're all social actors, and they're all represented by social actor objects. Social actor info is equivalent to a social actor object, but it's simplified. It's just a type and a name. And so when I run that, you're going to see that, well, hopefully you'll see that I'm not following somebody, and then I'll follow them. Let's see. So it says, these people below are following you, but you're not following them, and it gives me one person, Ben Wilde. So if I go into my feed now, I want you, I guess, to look at two things, the feed and the I'm following view. When I refresh the page, Oh, maybe I had to hit enter first. I don't know. Looks like I'm having some internet connection slowness. Well, you might just have to take my word for it. When I complete that second action, I'm going to follow that user. And then immediately, that's going to update my followed count. It's going to create an event in my feed that anyone who follows me can see that says that I'm now following that person. And my following view is going to immediately start containing posts from that person from previously and going forward. Hopefully we get better internet working soon. Okay, so back to the presentation. I'm not going to talk about feeds. Before I do that, I'm going to give you a bit of a recap. Yes? Right, so the question is, can we add new social actor types? And we don't currently offer that functionality. Right now, the only actor types you have are people, sites, documents, and tags. And as we go further, I'm going to talk about some limitations and some caveats in different kinds of actors. You cannot currently add new actor types. Right, so the question is, so this is specifically with profile properties, they're read-only. And we don't have a way using CSOM. So if you're using SharePoint Online, for example, we don't really have a method for you to be able to go in and change profile properties programmatically. Yep. But that does not affect things like following and feeds. Those are definitely read-write. So these are some of the common functions you'll end up using, probably. All right, now let's go into feeds. This is my favorite part. I talked before, I gave you kind of an overview of our storage, and I talked a little bit about the cache, and now I'm going to dive into that a little bit more. From the perspective of a developer and an end user, nothing I'm going to say from this point forward in this particular slide is going to impact their experience. But I want to give you a taste of how these features work on the inside to help you better understand what can and cannot be done with them. So as I said, feed posts are represented in a persisted store location and also a cached location. The cached location is used to pick up things like the following, to populate things like the following view and the everyone view. And the persisted feed locations allow you to see data indefinitely, obviously. So a persisted feed is the content database, the SharePoint list in everyone's personal site. The cache feed is that Fabric cache. So in the most basic example, when I write a new microblog post, that's going to get picked up, and it's going to get written to my personal site content database, personal site in the content database, and it's going to get written to my cached feed. That way, anyone following me will see that post. Anyone who goes to my profile page will see that post. From this point forward, when I talk about feeds, I'm referring to both of these things simultaneously. Anytime we post to both of these locations if both locations exist. If I want to post to a team site, I'm going to target that team site, and the post is going to be written to both those locations again. And those two locations combined represent the site feed. So I've got user feeds, and I've got site feeds. I also have document feeds and tag feeds, and I'll get to that in a little bit. Another concept I want to introduce on this slide is replies, right? So when I reply to someone else's post, we want to do a few things. If I see that post in the feed, I should see that person's reply right there. If I'm following the person who wrote the post, I should see the reply, and I should see that this thread's been updated. If I'm following the person who made the reply, I should also see that post, because that's a true value of serendipitous discovery. If I'm following somebody, I want to see the posts, the conversations they're participating in as well. And so we actually accomplish that by creating multiple posts. And I'll explain how that works and the difference between them. So let's say I make a new microblog post. It gets stored in my feed. And then my friend Ben replies to that post. His reply is going to be stored in my feed as well. And the reason we do that is because we want to maintain a single truth for that conversation. That no matter where you are, you can see every post, every reply, and every person who liked that conversation, and we want that data accessible in a single place. So that's great. Now anybody following me can see my post, and they can see the fact that Ben replied to it. But what about people following Ben? How are they going to find out he replied to that post? What we do is we generate what we call a reference thread in Ben's feed that is exactly what it sounds like. It's simply a thread that contains the thread ID for the truth that's in my content database. So using reference threads, we're able to refer to the same post in multiple locations. We do the same thing with mentions and tags. If you mention a user, we put a reference thread in their feed to notify them, hey, you got mentioned over here. You should take a look at this thing. If you're following a tag and a post gets tagged with that tag, we're going to put a reference post in the tag feed so that you can go back and see what that original post was that had the tag. Now, up to this point, all of these things are handled behind the scenes. You don't really need to worry about reference threads if you're taking advantage of our object model or if you're using our feed. We do the extra steps of gathering this data and delivering it to you in a consistent way. So if any of that was confusing, you don't have to worry about it. The two things that the one thing that I do want you to take away from this slide is the two gaps you see there. Documents and tags do not have persisted store locations. And there are two big consequences of that. One is on the write side. Using our APIs, it's not possible to write to the feed of a document or to the feed of a tag directly. And similarly on the read side, it's not possible to create a feed post, or sorry, it's not possible to consume a feed of a particular document or a particular tag by itself. And the only place where you will see document and tag posts is in the following view, if you happen to be following those documents or tags. So I think that this is probably it's an important caveat. When you have the ability to request the feeds of individual users and individual sites, and that's it. There's also user experience consequences to this. We don't want to put data in a location that's not going to be persisted. Data that would be valuable, for example, user conversations. So when you're the kinds of data that show up in document feeds are data that would be replicated in other places. For example, when documents get edited, we'll create an event for that. When documents get shared, we'll create an event for that. Those two things are things that we're okay with not living forever. In the case of tag feeds, tag feeds are actually much simpler. The only thing that shows up in a tag feed is reference posts. Reference posts to threads that live on either sites or user feeds. And so there's actually a workaround. If you want to get the feed of a tag, and this is actually what we do in our product on the tag profile page, you can use search, because all of this data has been indexed on the user personal site and the site content database. So you can actually use search to generate a tag feed. And this is exactly how our tag profile pages work. While we're on the topic of limitations, there's one other limitation that I want to mention. You may be thinking that you can build an application, or at least we've heard a lot of requests for the ability to build an application that does things like posting on behalf of. So maybe I have some external system and I want to post a user's feeds every time they do something. Or maybe I want to force users to follow a particular person. If you remember in the beginning of my demo, I created a context based on a username and password. And that is the only way that you can currently post. You can only post or take advantage of any of these features in the context of a particular user. I think that this is an area that it's a logical extension that in the future we would add more administrative capabilities where at a higher permission level you can perform more interesting functions like being able to post on behalf of, follow on behalf of, write to user profiles, things like that. But for this current release, that is not possible. You can only post in the context of a particular user. So one last thing I want to show you about feeds is how we create these feeds in an on-demand way. So like I said, we got two aggregate feeds, the following view and the everyone view. And I'm going to talk about how we actually generate the following view and deliver that to you in milliseconds. The first step is we gather that information. What information do we need? We need to know what you're following. And then in another location, we also store the latest update time of every activity that exists in the feed cache. We compare those two lists, and what we get is a sorted list of every thing that you follow and how recently it was updated. We then pull the feeds from the cache of all the things that were most recently updated that you're following. And then we've got a big list of feeds that we have to sort. When you're creating feeds, there's a number of ways you can sort. You can set an end date and a begin date. You can sort the threads by most recently replied to, which is what we use in our UI. The thread that was most recently replied to always shows up at the top. You can also sort feeds if you wish. By thread creation time, so in the order in which threads were created, always newest to oldest. And we also, in this step, roll up similar data. So like I said, we've got reference threads floating around there, we've got posts, we've got events telling you that people were following people, and we take a second here to roll up similar data. So you're never gonna, if you're following a person who made a post with a tag and you're following that tag, you're never going to see that post twice. We make sure that you only see it one time. And similarly, if the same user starts following multiple people, you're only going to see one event that said this user started following so and so many people. You're not going to see multiple posts basically reporting almost the same information. So those are all the things we do in this step. We then trim, and there's a number of different trim steps we do. The first thing that I consider as part of trim is we're going to pull reference post data. So like I said, we've got these reference posts hanging around. They don't actually contain any information, but they tell us where to get the information. So we're going to attempt to get that information. If we're not able to get that information in enough time, you're not going to see that post. And that's because our goal is to provide this data quickly. Now, in my experience, I've never seen that step fail. But if you're in a very high-load environment, and your server's really struggling, it's possible that you could refresh your feed twice and actually see different data. Again, I've never seen this happen, but it's theoretically possible because we are very aggressive about making sure that anytime we make a request, we get that data back quickly. Because we'd rather show the user something than something complete. The second step is security trimming. So we have security trimming features, and I want to talk a little bit about what you can and can't do with security trimming. Anything that's a system-generated event in SharePoint, if it refers to content, it will be security trimmed. So if it's a site feed post, maybe it's a post in your profile that says you started following a new document or site, we're automatically going to perform a security trimming step anytime anyone visits takes a look at that information. And the way we do security trimming is we take a look at that URL that's referring to, and if you have access to that URL, we assume you'll have access to the microblog post. You can also make use of this functionality in the microblog OM. You can define a URL that you want your post to be security trimmed against if you want to add that level of data protection. What we do not security trim is microblog post content. So if you make a new microblog post to the public feed and you link to layoffs 2013 or something like that, you're at high risk of getting added to that document yourself because we will not security trim user data. And there's a number of user experience reasons why we don't do that. But certainly when you're building an application, you can do that. So once we get all these steps done, then you can finally see the post. And posts always come down as a root post and a collection of two replies, the two most recent replies. You also get information about the people who liked it, a bunch of metadata, and information about how the post should be displayed on the screen. And I want to go in a little bit into what those posts actually look like. Even though you start with a post and two replies, we have APIs that allow you, obviously, to then go ahead and get the entire thread if you want to see the full conversation. So every social feed, it's very simple. It's a collection of social threads. Within social threads, we have actors. And again, actors are people, sites, documents, and tags that are referenced in that post. We put them in a single location, so we're not duplicating data. For example, if a user made two replies to that post, their user profile data is only stored in that actors list, so it saves space. All threads have attributes, and all threads have an ID. And you can use that ID to go back and reply to that thread or get the full thread. And then, obviously, a social thread contains a root post and a collection of replies. And these post objects may contain attachments. And attachments include document previews, video previews, and images. Obviously, they have things like an author. Social posts have their own IDs, and these IDs can be used to like or get the likers of that item, because you can like every post and every reply. Liker info gives you information about limited information about who liked that particular thing. And then, obviously, every post and reply is going to have text. There's more here, but these were some of the key things that I wanted to call out before we go into a demo and actually see what this stuff looks like. So again, social data shows up in two locations. Social APIs, you're going to find them in two locations. There's the microfeed namespace and the social namespace. The social namespace is a complete superset of the data that's in Microfeed, so we highly encourage you to use social and the social feed manager anytime you're working with social data. So there's a lot of functions in here. The key ones are things like create post and get feed. For this first demo, I'm going to show what it looks like to get a feed and do some simple processing on it. First, I want to talk a little bit about this get feed function. As you can see, it takes two parameters. There's a social feed type, and there's social feed options. So if we go into social feed type, nearly every type of feed you can access, you will find here. If you've seen the newsfeed page, you'll see at the top you've got following, everyone, mentions, likes, and my activities. And these are represented here as well, but slightly differently. Everyone feed is the everyone feed. And that shows you all the public microblog posts from everybody within your organization. There's a likes feed, which shows you things you have liked within SharePoint. It's a personal feed. News feed is the term in the API that we use to refer to the following view. This is the feed of all of the people, sites, content, and tags you follow in SharePoint. Personal feed is your activities. And timeline is actually a different algorithm that we sometimes use to pull in following view data. Probably not worth getting into at this session. But there's one thing, there are two things that are missing from this API. The ability to get feeds for particular sites or people, and the ability to get your mentions feed. And those are represented separately. So if I go back into Social Feed Manager, you can see Get Mentions is up here. If you want to get the mentions feed, the reason why we separate this out is because we've added additional functionality here. As you can see here, there's a clear unread mentions boolean that you can set when you get mentions feed. Mentions has the concept of read and unread because they're basically notifications for that particular user. And so in addition to requesting the feed, we also want you to give the ability to simultaneously mark those posts as read. And then get feed for is what's used to get the personal feed of a particular person or site. As you can see, it takes in a actor ID parameter. And using that actor ID, you can either specify an account name to get the feed of a user, or you can specify the URL to the news feed page on the team site if you want to get the feed for a particular team site. So I think that's the main stuff I wanted to go over in the OM. So if we take a look at this demo, I'm going to create a feed manager. And then I'm immediately going to say get feed. I want a news feed, and I'm going to provide one social feed option, and there are a few of these. And I'm going to say I want at most 5 threads. I don't care about anything more than the 5 most recent threads. And for everything else, I'll use defaults. So once I get this data, I'm just going to loop through it, and I'm going to print it on the screen. So the first thing I'm going to do, because I'm going to refer to this the social actors so frequently, I'm just going to make it easy on myself and give it a name. And then I'm going to write down the root post. I'm going to put the root post author name on a line, and then I'm going to write the root post text. So you can see here, in the post, the author is represented as a number, the author index. And that number tells you where to look in the authors array to get that user's properties. So I'm going to pull out that user's name, and then I'm going to write the root post text. And then I'm going to say, if I've got any replies to this thread, print them out. So you can see I can use post functions like total reply count to, in the UI, say, hey, this has 4 replies. And I can also say this has 10 likes. Even if I can't see all 4 replies, I have the data to know how many there are, how many I could get. And then for each reply, I'm going to print the name, the text of the reply, and then how many people like that thing. And let's see if the network's working. Cool. Oh, that was fast. Great. So this is a feed. And And if we look at this, you can see they mirror each other exactly. Matt Fezco is now falling, breaking down, whatever. At Ben Wilde, how's the check going? All those posts show up in both locations, and it's very easy to consume this data It's we completely separate the actual text from things like markup. So no matter what, no matter whether you're building a an HTML app, an iOS app, whatever it is, it's very easy to retrieve this data and get the information you want. So that's what consuming feeds looks like. Now let's take a look at retrieving feed. No, that's what I just did. So again, some key features here. There's the get feed function, get feed for, get full thread, get all likers, get mentions. These are the main APIs you're going to be working with to get feed data. And now let's take a look at the other side of this. We've seen what consuming a feed looks like. Let's see what creating new posts looks like. So back to the demo, the conversations tab. So again, to create posts, you're using the same social feed manager objects. And the data of a post exists in a social post creation data object. This object, if we want to explore it, has a bunch of options you can use on posts. There are some things you can do, some things you can't. Social post creation data, there it is. So for example, I can add an attachment, content items, content text. So content items are the links, mentions, and tags that you would add to your post. Content text is the actual text of the post. Security URIs, that's where you define URLs that you want to security trim against if you wish. And you can also define things like a source, and the source helps, it declares what application is, so this will say posted by so-and-so application. It's a way for you to declare your application as a distinct thing. Let's see, so if we go into the demo, I'm just gonna make a really simple post. I'm gonna mention somebody, I'm gonna add a tag, and I'm gonna add a link. You can see I'm gonna first define my content text. At placeholder, have you tried the new placeholder? Placeholder. This is how we represent posts on the creation side. And that's what the content text will look like. The next step is to create the content items. So obviously the order you put the content items in matters because it's going to define where the content items go on the post above. So the first item that I want to add is a mention. And adding a mention is extremely easy. All I have to do is say that my social data item is of type user, and I'm going to provide that user name. Since all account names start with this ridiculous string in SharePoint Online, I'm just going to pull that out. And then I'm going to throw the user's email address on the other side to make it easy on myself. That's a mention. As soon as that post gets posted, ROM is going to identify that. It's going to send an email to that user saying you are mentioned, and it's going to add that ref mention to their feed and mark it as unread. So that user in multiple locations is going to know, hey, I was mentioned somewhere and I could take a look at this. It's this simple. The second item I'm going to add is a link. And similarly, a link, I can specify the text and the URL that I want to link, and that's going to fit in placeholder spot one. And the final one is a tag. And like the mention, by simply specifying these two lines that I'm trying to create a tag and giving the tag a name, it's going to automatically generate the post in my feed, and it's going to generate that reference tag. So anyone following this tag will see this post. Another thing that I want to mention about tags is it's important that all tags in the new social experience start with a pound sign. We're using a new term store called the hashtags term store, and one of the requirements in that term store is that every tag starts with a pound sign. So if you try to create a tag that doesn't start with the hash, you're going to get an exception back from the server. The final thing I'm going to do is I'm going to specify a post source, and it's just a string of text. So after that, I'm then going to call the create post function. The create post function has two parameters. One is that post creation data that I just worked on, and the other is a target ID. You can target posts to two locations. You can target posts to another thread, and that creates a reply to that thread, or you can target posts to a team site by specifying that team site URL in the target ID column. In this case, I want to make a regular public microblog post, so I'm going to leave it blank, and it'll just post to my feed, and everybody who follows me will see it. I run that query, but I've also, if you notice, requested I'm going to store the resulting thread as well, because I'm now going to reply to it, so I can show you what I mean by that. So I'm going to make a new social post creation data object here called reply. And I'm going to add content text to it. And I'm going to call that create post function again. And you can see all I got to do is specify that ID. And now I've made a reply. And in the OM, we're going to make those reference posts. We're going to do everything we need to do. All you got to do is specify what the post contains and where you want it to go. Similarly with liking a post, all you got to do is specify the post ID that you want to like, and we're going to like it for you. And finally, I'm going to take advantage of those viewful thread and view all likers methods that I referred to earlier so we can see the resulting conversation that I generated by making a post, replying to it, and liking it. So let's see what that looks like. So if I run that demo, cool. So that's what the post looks like in the console. You can see, you know, at Ben, have you tried the new Bing search engine? Pound tag. One reply, one like. You can see the reply, and you can see then the list of people who liked it below. And then if I go into the UI, you'll see the exact same thing. Cool. So you'll see the exact same thing, and you'll also notice that that source attribute that I defined contain the string SPC 2012 demo. So I'm also able to declare what application this post came from. So back to the slides. Common things you're going to want to do when you're dealing with conversations is creating posts. Create post creates public posts, team site posts, and replies all in one function. Delete post will delete a particular reply or a full thread based on your permissions. And then you can like and unlike posts very, very easily. So in summary, a few things that I want you to take away is we provide data-driven and platform-independent APIs that you can use to access all this social data and make use of these social features both within SharePoint and SharePoint application in SharePoint apps or anywhere else. Our focus this release has been on consumer applications and enabling consumer scenarios. So certain things like post on behalf of, follow on behalf of, aren't currently available, but it's definitely a direction we'll be going in the future. One thing that if you have a scenario where you want to start, if you're thinking along the lines of posting on behalf of or something like that, when events happen, you want to integrate with a CRM app or something like that. One thing that we've been doing within Microsoft, and I think it's a good thing to consider, is actually creating bot users that you can use to report that data. So maybe you have a user that represents your CRM app or something like that, and then those events get posted to that feed. Anyone following it will then get to find out about what's happening in that connection. And the final piece is everything is live. Unlike SharePoint 2010, we've built a system that is always giving you the latest up-to-date information from across your company. So thank you guys very much. That was the presentation, and I'm ready to take any questions. Yep.
Thanks, that was really helpful. Hey, about the microblog or the microblog, control that you can put. I found, is it true still that you can't put that on just any old site? That it's tightly, it's only supported in sites created using the team site template and the my site?
So actually taking that web part and using it in a different location?
For example, Document Center or Publish, a site that was created with one of the other site templates.
Right, so a site feed can be added to any site. It's one of the site features. And if you add that feature, you then have access to that web part. And you can start conversing on that site. Does that kind of answer the question? So any site
in the preview that didn't work. I never got that work. It came out. I could see the micro feed web part, and when I added it to pages on any other kind of site, you just got this very ugly table with full
okay.
of GUIDs.
So the web part itself is not designed to be used on other pages. So if you're trying to put it on different pages, it probably won't work. Yeah.
Okay, so the microfeed web part is not supported. Okay, that's the experience I was having, that the microfeed web part
right.
on any other kind of site, it does not work. So what does work on other kinds of sites?
So if you want to have microblog conversations on a site, you need to go into the site features and activate the site feed. And when you do that, we'll create the site feed list on that site, and we'll put the correct UI in place so that you can post on that site. But just putting the web part on a site isn't going to give you what you need to start microblogging on it.
It creates the list, but then how does the UI surface without the web part? How do I get that?
Okay. Well, so the web part gets added automatically when you activate the site feed feature, or it should. If you're having problems with it, I'd be happy. Maybe we could talk afterwards,
okay.
and I can help.
There's a newsfeed page that gets added as well.
Yeah, there's also a newsfeed page. That's true. Newsfeed.aspx off of the root of your team site or whatever
that's
site.
What you're,
okay. Thank you. Yeah?
All right. Is there a server object model for the feed as well?
I'm sorry?
Server object model for the feed.
Yes, we also have a server object model.
Same capabilities as
It's everything you see here, plus a lot of additional functionality. And you know, that obviously only works in an on-prem environment.
Yep.
And we've got documentation for that in MSDN as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions about that. Maybe ask the experts tonight or anything like that.
Okay.
Yep.
Like activities on behalf of? Is that possible?
I'm sorry?
Activities on behalf of.
I'm sorry.
If you're going to add a post on behalf of the system.
Oh, post on behalf of.
Yeah. Is that possible in the server side?
We don't really support it, but there are, you're much more likely to be able to see success with those kinds of things using the server OM. Yeah.
Okay. So. Just one last question. Mm-hmm. The noteboard?
The noteboard.
Where did that go?
So the noteboard is still there. We're still storing noteboard data in social database, and you can still access that feature. In our UI, in almost every instance, we've hidden the noteboard web part and related web parts, but they're still accessible. And if you write noteboard posts, we'll also post an event to your feed saying, hey, you made a comment, and we'll show you what the comment was.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Hi. I have a question on the posting as such. You know, in an enterprise environment, we have a requirement wherein, you know, employees, if they post something offensive, we could programmatically delete the post.
Right.
What will happen to the news feed of people who follow that post, you know, for the history? You know, you have 15 days history, which is retained.
Right.
So can that be deleted with the delete post? Or?
Right. So the question is, can you manage the feed by deleting posts on behalf of users? We actually do support that. So if you have an automated app, for example, that's maybe crawling the feed and looking for offensive terms or something like that, if you authenticate that app as an administrator, you can delete any posts that you see across the system, whether it's on a team site or or the public feed. So you can accomplish that scenario. Yep. Thanks. Yes?
First of all, thank you for the useful information you shared.
Oh, no problem.
So the question is, what about the custom activity feeds that we could add in 2010? Any changes in that? Any enhancements?
So when you say custom activity feeds, you mean like custom posts that get generated to feeds, or?
For example, if I extend the activity type and I create one of my own, which is custom something, you know, I want to generate a different thing than just the posting of a tag or a document or a user.
Oh, I see. So you want to make a new feed to represent something.
Type of a new feed, extend the existing ones and create my own custom type.
Yep.
This is more from the product perspective. So we want to build on top of what is offered in SharePoint 2013.
Yep.
So I would like to know more about what are the changes or enhancements that are happening in 2013.
Cool. So I think this will answer the question. So in SharePoint 2013, with our new model, currently you can only follow people, sites, documents, and tags, and those are the only entities that will have feeds. But we still, you still have access to the old social data store, and you can still continue creating new feeds in the way that you did in 2010.
Those are the actors that you defined, right? Those are the four type of actors that you could possibly have.
Yep.
I think more referring to the activity types, the custom activity types.
Oh, custom activity types.
Yeah.
Okay.
Extending the ones that are there, you know, notify me for a birthday, for a user, for a document you have in the user profile.
Right.
So defining more of those.
So in our server OM, We do allow for that functionality. Mm-hmm. If you're using the client OM that I presented today, we don't. And the main reason for that is because, from what I said earlier, you can only post in a client context. And if we allowed you to post, for example, birthday events, anybody could generate a birthday event at any time because every user would have access to that. But if you're using server OM, you can create new activity types, activity templates. You can we can localize those on the fly if you're in a multilingual environment. All that functionality is available in server OM.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Just a quick question. So you mentioned you cannot post to document feeds, but
yes.
If you wanted to approximate that, like make a post that a periodic review is doing a document,
yep.
Is there a way to extend the web parts, or you mentioned bot users, you know, how would you try to implement that requirement?
So if I wanted to report about documents, and given the limitation that I can't post to a doc feed, what I would probably do is either post to the site that doc is stored on.
Okay.
Maybe post to the user who did that activity on the document.
Okay.
Or I could also possibly post to a bot user or something like that, depending on what information I'm trying to get across and who the audience I'm trying to target is. Any one of those options could be right for your scenario.
Okay. Is there any extensibility of the web parts themselves, or you would have to post to the user feed or the site feed?
So you mean extensibility that would allow you to be able to see a doc feed or something?
Yeah, to sort of simulate that scenario.
Oh, I see. So you'd want to maybe take our web part and just focus on those posts or something.
Right.
So out of the box, our web parts wouldn't have that functionality. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it would be very possible for you to be able to create that using our APIs.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
Hi. It was possible on the preview to create multiple words hashtags, and now in the RTM it's not possible anymore.
Sorry, can you say the first part again?
On the preview, it was possible to create multiple words hashtags.
Oh, multiple word hashtags.
Yeah.
Great question. So, in the preview, we were using the traditional SharePoint keywords for tags. Between preview and RTM, we're now using a new term store called hashtag. And the main purpose of the hashtag term store is to make it a more lightweight and easy gesture to make tags in microblog posts. So the two big restrictions, the two big changes in the hashtag term store are all hashtags have to start with the hash sign, and they can only be one word.
Okay.
So, yep, thank you.
Okay,
that's
thank
a
you.
Good point.
So I also have the same question on the hashtag. So we can put a lot of hashtags now, but is it possible that we can search for all the hashtags at one place that, let's say, people are doing, you know, news feeds and, you know, you can...
Oh, so, like, show me all the tags that are available?
Right.
Yeah, so we do have APIs. I didn't show them today, but the term store has APIs that you can use to search it to get tags. And we use this in our own UI. If you hit the pound sign and start typing, mm-hmm. we're going to start doing word wheeling search to recommend you tags. So
sure.
Yes, that's
sure. So, but yep. Is there any way to see all the tags which are out there, and somebody can click? Let's say somebody's interested in something. We do show right now that which are more popular. But is there any list of all the tags, and I can click on it and see everything about that tag?
So, I'm not sure if we have an API that allows you to see all of the tags in the user experience.
Okay.
You can certainly search all of the tags and get tags with certain search results. But if you're an administrator, you would have access to see every tag.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks. Yeah?
So typically the social environment syncs up to something like AD or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there APIs that kind of let you create profiles in that case, or is there a problem?
So APIs that allow you to create profiles.
Yeah, so
yes.
Something like your bot profiles, is it just straightforward single command to do that?
Yes, absolutely. So I mean, most of the time you're syncing with AD or something like that. So
yep.
The first step might be to establish this user in AD. But once you do that, we have APIs that allow you to instantiate their personal site and get them up and running with social features, whether they be a bot or a regular user or anything.
Is it possible to create, say, just a user that exists within the SharePoint social and not on, say, like AD or something like that afterwards?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. As long as you have your SharePoint server set up that way, that's definitely possible and included.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Thank you.
So with the social data sitting in the content DB now,
yep.
And you have all those reference posts now, so
right.
You don't have duplication of data.
Right.
What happens like if the my site cleanup timer job runs and kills somebody's my site? you know, and delete some of those original posts that reference posts link to.
Right. So in this scenario, like somebody has left the company or something like that, and we're cleaning up their old My site. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, they've been disabled or something, and so now their profile's been marked for deletion, and their My site's deleted. And,
right.
You know, what happens to all the other people's feeds that have, you know, in the past referenced those?
Right. That's a great question. So what happens when the thing a reference post refers to doesn't exist anymore?
Yes.
And in things like the following view and the everyone view, you're just never going to see that item again. Even though the reference post exists, because we failed to retrieve the original item, we're not going to show that to you anymore. And because we work so often in very recent data, that only is a problem for a short amount of time. Now, the other place that you mentioned is, you know, we've created a reference post in this person's feed that said they replied to this thing, and that thing doesn't exist anymore. Do I still have a record of this thing that I replied to? And the answer is yes, because the reference post contains a little bit more information. It contains the original post content, and it also contains the content of your reply. So even if that data gets deleted somewhere, I still have my record of what I did stored in my content database. So does that help answer that question?
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Hi. I see a lot of similarities between Open Graph and Open Social.
Yep.
Is there some way you can relate to this?
So they're all very similar because they all provide very similar functionality. Unfortunately, these APIs today are not similar to Open Social, but they are not Open Social. They're not completely compatible. Yep. And I, you know, especially as we look at Yammer, right, which I think is using Open Social or open some kind of standard. Naturally, that's a direction we're going to be wanting to go in the long term is unifying under a standard. Yeah, thank you.
Cool, thanks.